This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Chipped ham and football. That's what Pittsburgh does. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the show. My name's Brian Batko. As always, with you from the Post-Gazette, one of our Steelers beat writers. Happy Tuesday, April 16th. Today's date's a square root. I like that. But more important, we've got a good show lined up for you today, joined by Emory Hunt of Football Game Plan. He's an NFL draft analyst for CBS. He's all over the place this time of year. Very comprehensive with his draft knowledge. We're going to get into sort of an unusual, or at least one name that maybe you haven't seen a lot as a potential Steelers fit at wide receiver. The Cooper DeJean conversation, the Iowa cornerback who visited the team on Friday, and sort of the unicorn in the room with him. And then we'll talk about the latest visitor to Pittsburgh, Troy Fa'utanu, tackle from Washington. Emory thinks he can play that position in the NFL and doesn't have to move to center. He'll tell you why. As always, this show brought to you by Pella. No better place to get new windows and doors installed in your home than Pella. They can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and your budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. All right, on to the show. All right, we're back with Emory Hunt. He's got his own enterprise at Football Game Plan, but you can also see plenty of his draft analysis over at CBS Sports. Probably hear him on various podcasts, and now this is one of them. Emory, welcome to the PG show. Thanks for joining me, man.
I appreciate you for having me on, man. Busy time of the year.
Absolutely, yeah. We can't get enough draft talk and chatter and speculation right now, and I'm sure most of the places you go, you're talking QBs, you're talking top wide receivers. You know, Steelers don't pick till 20, so we'll get a little bit more in the weeds, but sometimes that can be fun to do for people like you who are, you know, you've got the whole board laid out from top to bottom. I guess I'll just start with kind of a more general one. Like, is there a player in this class that just kind of screams Steelers to you, a guy that just looks like a Steeler, somebody who might be a great fit here, whether it's a lineman, a receiver, a corner, a safety, whatever, whoever comes to mind for you at this point?
It's funny you say that, because I'm laughing because I was on an earlier show where I talked about how it felt like the Steelers and Ravens just cheat at the draft. Like, they turn their player cards in weeks before. And guys, like, think about this. The year Najee Harris was drafted, all since January, everybody was like, oh man, this dude's a Pittsburgh Steeler. He looks like a Steeler. And then he ends up getting drafted by the Steeler. It's like, it's crazy how it always seems to work out for these guys. So one guy I have in mind absolutely is Keon Coleman, because he's cut from the same cloth as George Pickens. I love guys that look like they like to fight. I love guys that go out there and attack the football and do things in a spectacular manner. And Coleman, to me, is someone that's just a spitting image of Pickens. And what I like about Coleman's game is the fact that he's very good off the line of scrimmage, which is not surprising because of his punt return capabilities. That tells you a lot about your quickness, your footwork, your ability to make things happen in a short amount of space. So, you know, he runs great routes. He knows he's able to get out of his breaks, in and out of his breaks. He may not have the long burner speed, but he has football speed and quickness. I'm a big fan of his game.
I was going to say, I feel like I've seen you be higher on Coleman, the big 6'4 receiver out of Florida State, transferred there from Michigan State. I've seen him compared to George Pickens a lot, which is interesting. Those would be kind of two alpha dogs in one receiver room. But I think it's even more kind of applicable to the Steelers because I don't know that they'll go receiver at 20, but then you kind of have that next group of guys, at least according to most people's boards. Is Coleman somebody you think could be there when they're on the clock in the second round at like 51, or would that have to maybe be a trade-up scenario? Because some of the guys they've had visit, I think they're targeting in that range from Ricky Pearsall to Xavier Leggett and Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky.
It's always tough when you're talking about where guys end up in the draft because, you know, even though he was my number one overall player in 2018, I never would have imagined Lamar Jackson to be sitting there at 32. So you never really know, you know, in the draft and how it plays out. So I always use this philosophy. If you like a player and he can help your football team, take him. It's like art. You know, don't bypass it. You buy it when you see it. Otherwise, you'll never see that piece of art again.
Yeah, Coleman is somebody who I know his 40 time wasn't great at the combine. But, I mean, like you said, he probably plays faster than the athletic testing. He's got the basketball background, too. I feel like the Steelers they gravitate toward those guys a little bit with that sort of natural athleticism and physicality. Is there another receiver in this group who you think maybe if it's more of an inside guy or more of a slot guy, considering the Steelers traded Deontay Johnson to the Panthers this offseason? And I think the needle that they maybe have to thread, Emery, is, you know, you've got George Pickens established now as your clear cut number one. He's big dog now in the group. Who do you get as sort of a complimentary piece that maybe buy into that role and play well off of Pickens doing what he can do well, winning those one-on-one matchups on the outside?
Well, here's the thing. You never want to worry about, you know, is there too many alphas in a room, because you just want great players. We've seen this done before. Vikings had Randy Moss, Chris Carter, Jake Reed in the same. That's three legit studs, right? But I would also say the guy you touched on, I'm a big fan of too, because he fits the same mold, and that's Ricky Pearsall. You know, I joked on Twitter, I tweeted out a picture from the combine of him on the podium, you know, with his, you know, beanie hat on up high, you know, tattoos. Sean's like, I'm drafting him number one overall based off aesthetics alone, you know. So, but Pearsall, when you go back and watch while studying Anthony Richardson's game in preparation for the draft, you saw Pearsall was his number one receiver. He's the only one out there that can catch, you know, at the position. And he was making some impressive catches. And you fast forward to this season, he was also doing the same thing. He's just a very good receiver and has great hands. To me, that's something that is always first and foremost. How can you catch the football? And he is someone that was able to do that. So if you're looking for, you know, a Batman or a Robin or whatever you want to parse it, Pearsall would be one of those guys that fits the mold too.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. The Robin to George Pickens is Batman. And then, you know, who knows how things will play out, but at least right now, I think that's kind of how the role allocation will be for the Steelers offense if that's the route they go. No pun intended, talking receivers. Another guy that they had visit on Friday was Cooper DeJean. And I think there's some people out there, I don't know if it sometimes becomes subliminal or subconscious with the Steelers jerseys and the Iowa jerseys, but I feel like I do see people say Cooper DeJean just seems like a Steelers pick, a Steelers prospect. I don't know that they would go that direction at 20, and then he's probably not going to last too far past that. But what do you make of DeJean? It seems like he's one of the more polarizing prospects in this draft. As I read experts like you, I see some say there's absolutely no reason why you need to classify this guy as anything other than a corner. And then I see others saying, I don't know if he's going to be an outside corner in the NFL. You should probably just call him a well-rounded DB.
Here's what I'll say what everybody's thinking. If he wasn't a white cornerback, it would be no question. And here's why. You see it in people skating around it. You know, if you're
I love that you just want to talk about it, because I think it's a very relevant thing. And it's not like you're saying a guy can't do something because of his race, but this is pretty much unprecedented over the last. Well, there was one last year, Riley Moss,
right, from Iowa. Here's the thing.
He wasn't being talked about as a first rounder, obviously.
But also, and they don't have the luxury of getting beat. You know what I'm saying? So if they get beat once, see, told you he's a safety. Meanwhile, the black corner can get beat all day, and you still say, well, he just needs, you know what I'm saying? But so that's the problem they face. It's unfortunate. It's no different than the black quarterback. When he has an incompletion, it's, you know, white quarterback throws incompletions. Oh, he threw it away. They have to play another down. Black dude makes the same throw, and he's inaccurate, right? So both sides are dealing with the same type of stereotypes at the at their respective position, which is why it's just insane. Because when you're watching Cooper DeJean and you're watching him against Power Five wide receivers that are going to be drafted at the NFL level, you're watching him hold his own. So why is there a question? And he has the ball skills, and he has the football IQ, and he has the ability to play both off and press coverage. So he is checking all of those boxes. Now, if you want him to play across the board, that's cool, because we've seen that happen before. Minkah Fitzpatrick was one that could play across the board and kind of match up versus some receivers while also playing deep as a safety, but also playing a shallow alley type defender. And again, it's a lot of times with Iowa, is sight unseen. If you told me we got an Iowa defensive player, I don't even have to watch him play. He's going to be good, right? Sight unseen, I'm sold. So DeJean, to me, is someone that should play corner until proven otherwise. There's no different than having a conversation about Troy Fatanu and, well, you should move him to tackle because of, you know, he's short. You know, he's at 6'3". Like, I just watched him in the Pac-12 against all of these pass rushers that's going to be playing in the NFL that you talk about as first-round picks. He's holding his own. So why move him? If he's doing the job, he could do the job.
That's great. I want to get into Fautanu in a second because he's the most recent visitor for the Steelers, and there's some other interesting, you know, position flexibility questions with him. But DeJean, the last thing I wanted to ask you, and when you've talked to coaches or scouts about this, you know, you mentioned the black quarterback. Clearly a lot of guys have, you know, they've broken through that ceiling. That's, you know, fortunately much less of a question or storyline anymore. But again, DeJean being to try to, you know, trying to be this first white corner drafted in the first round since I don't even know how long. Do people talk about, like, are you going to have to assess somewhat his, you know, level of being able to sort of deal with that pressure in a weird way? I mean, you're going to be out there, and I don't know if players are going to talk more junk to you when you're in that position. And like you said, you get beat. Now there's more of a microscope on you. Do you think teams from, you know, based on coaches or scouts that you've talked to have to sit down with him and sort of ask, like, you know, are you sort of ready for this obvious pressure that's going to come with being, you know, a little bit of a unicorn in this regard?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's either going to break you or make you. Again, think about this. And I bring up Lamar Jackson for a reason. Yes, even though we've seen more black quarterbacks start over time, right? Every draft season, it always pops up. You know, the questions of, you know, the subtle codes, right? So imagine a guy like Lamar Jackson in all of his glory, Heisman Trophy winner, probably should have won it again the second year because he was better the second year than he won it the year he actually won it. Going into that Ravens team that was, what, 4-5 when he took over and having to win every doggone game in order to get that team to the playoffs, right? Or otherwise, Harbaugh would have been fired. The whole regime would have changed, right? Sure, who knows how that thing would have turned out? So imagine dealing with that pressure, that quiet pressure, while also going out there and trying to execute. DeJean is the same thing. So imagine thinking, like, man, if I get beat, I'm gonna be a meme. I'm gonna be all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? And for it to not happen, or not happen on a consistent basis, that tells you that he's ready to go. Because he knows there's that quiet pressure out there. So to me, that's the type of guy you want. Someone that's able to compartmentalize pressure versus going and playing in the game and going out there and still execute at a high level and be a star. Sign me up for that all day.
Yeah, that is a fascinating storyline to me. In the Steelers in recent years, they drafted Presley Harvin III, one of the very few black punters that we've had in the league. And, you know, his play didn't keep him here past three seasons. But, you know, I certainly don't think that was an issue, and I don't think the Steelers saw that as an issue, obviously, either, using that seventh round pick on him. All right, pivot to O-line, because you brought him up, unprompted. Troy Fautanu from Washington. I think a lot of Steelers fans are reading up about him Monday because he took that pre-draft visit. We know the Steelers need a tackle. We know the Steelers need a center. Where do you view him? Is it a case of try him at tackle first, see if he can hack it? Or is it the beauty of him is that, hey, he's a good player. He's going to work out somewhere, whether that's tackle, guard, Or are you one of those people who thinks he could even play center if you need him there?
Well, that's a unique part. And that's where the position coaches come into play, because they'll work him out and see if he has that cross, you know, training ability. That's why a lot of teams tend to love Alabama offensive linemen, because they get work across the board throughout their collegiate career under Saban. We'll see if that continues under DeBoer. But for Tano, it's like, hey, we watched him dominate at tackle. He has the requisite long arms that they look for. So it shows you that his height isn't a problem. We see it out there with Slater with the Chargers. He's able to hold his own as a tackle because he can play tackle. And until he proves he can't play tackle, then we start to entertain whether or not he could be a guard. Because it doesn't matter how tall you are, because we've seen taller players at tackle not have the success like a Robert Gallery. Remember him? And he was ended up playing inside. So until Fotanu shows that he can't play tackle, but you like his chances because he is a super athletic player. Footwork is insane. And when you have a tackle like that and you're playing him on the left side, your playbook is entirely open. Teams are right-handed by nature. So when you're able to run weak side, it's very tough to defend because you can go either way. And now you combine the athleticism of the offensive line with the athleticism you have now at quarterback within the depth chart, whoever wins that job, your playbook is going to be insanely open because you're able to do so much movement and keeps defenders at bay.
And I think one of the interesting things about Fautanu is that he was a left tackle for a lefty quarterback in Michael Penix. So I don't know that there's like a, I think the Steelers probably would prefer to maybe get a right tackle in here, flip Broderick Jones over to his natural position. But I guess in that sense, I mean, is there much of a difference between, you know, the blind side protector versus, you know, you're over here on the right side traditionally with a right-handed QB?
I'm glad you brought up tackle play, because I feel like big tackle propaganda has flooded this country for at least three decades. Because here's the thing. If you have any quarterback worth his salt, he's able to step up into the pocket and evade that outside rush, which is why your guard center guard has to be excellent. If you're the closer you are to the football, the more important you are to the game. You know, so guard center guard has to be elite, because it helps your run game. It helps keep that interior pressure out of your face. Quarterback can step up and get out if there's a exterior rush, because the game has changed to where that exterior rush, you almost don't want to have dudes fly up the field, because that just opened the back door for an athletic quarterback. But if you have nowhere to step up, you can't do nothing offensively. So, but big tackle propaganda has a 30-year head start on the mindset of people. That's why you may want to go with a guard or a center earlier than people think they should go. But those are so integral to success of an offense.
Yeah, and that's key for the Steelers this year, because they've got a big old hole at center. But, you know, maybe they were onto this a couple years ago, and that they paid Isaac Seumalo and James Daniels the last couple off seasons in free agency. And now you see guards getting crazy money this year. You're starting to see some shorter but quicker quarterbacks. So that also helps to have that pocket for them. And I always tell Steelers fans, like, you know, about the left tackle, right tackle discussion of, you know, everybody has it drilled into their brains that left tackle is so much more important. I'm like, you know, the Steelers put TJ Watt on the left side of their defense. So you better not have just any schmo playing right tackle, or else he's going to cook that guy. So it's the constant chess match back and forth. And it, you know, it all kind of starts in the draft with evaluating these guys. All right, Emery, the last thing I wanted to ask you before I let you get out of here, I know you've been keeping up close tabs on the UFL as well. And we might have some football diehards watching that league or paying a little bit of attention to it. I've noticed just kind of casually that a couple former Steelers draft picks are doing very well there. And running back Anthony McFarland, he's down with the San Antonio team. And then I think defensive lineman Carlos Davis is leading the UFL in sacks. What can you tell us about those guys, and whether there's anybody out there who might kind of resurface after doing a stint in the tier two league right now that's got a little bit of traction now that they've merged the XFL and the other one that I can't think of the name right now.
The USFL.
The USFL, there it is.
The crazy part is, man, this just shows you that guys aren't finished products when they come out of college. They still have a little bit more room to grow. For instance, let's say someone, you talked about McFarland, outstanding tailback. He's healthy. He's getting opportunity to get consistent carries as the lead guy, which kind of helps him get into that running back groove that I like to say. And that shows you out there on the field, he's playing better. Davis is someone that's getting consistent reps, constantly getting out there and being able to provide that excellence up front. So the more you're able to play without the worry of, man, if I mess up on this play, I got to come out the game, you know, and that weighs on a player's mind, especially at the NFL level, where we know you could be in one year, out the next, or in one game, out the next. So it's a great league. I like to see it continue to grow. I've wrote an article about this in 2016 that said, you know, each NFL team could have its own spring league team, because you bring 90 guys to camp, you cut 45. That 45 you just cut is your spring team, right? And you can kind of, you know, work it like that. And so I like it. I do feel like it will continue to grow. They're going to expand next year. I'm excited to see that. Hopefully the Pittsburgh Marlins get back, if they could find a stadium to play.
That's why I forgot the USFL name, because they did away with our pseudo home team, the Maulers. So they were dead to me. But yeah, that's actually so fascinating to me, the idea of like the kind of affiliates or minor league teams like you see in MLB and NHL. I think if there was any city, Emery, where that would work and take off, Pittsburgh is a football crazed enough town. People would love to watch the developmental Steelers players in March and April or whatever. And, you know, we'd be doing chats and podcasts and stories about these guys who they still hold their rights. And, you know, this left guard looks like he's got some stuff to him right now. We got to bump him up to the big league team next year.
And you get a guy that knows the system, because now you can help out. You can send some coaches down to coach your scheme. It just makes everything work smoothly. The only league that doesn't have a developmental league is the NFL. They were a little bit too early on NFL Europe. Think about what they're trying to do now. They already had that in place. Had they stuck with it, when Roger Goodell took over in 2007, had they stuck with NFL Europe, we might have a full-fledged 16-team European league already.
And now we've just got teams playing games overseas left and right, and Steelers are doing a kicking and punting clinic right now in Ireland as we speak with a couple former players. So the globalization continues. But yeah, that's a you know, great idea. That's one of those like 10, 20, maybe 30 year down the road ideas of thinking big. That's very fun to think about. Maybe they could revive the Maulers name for that if it ever came to pass. Well, Emery, hey, thanks so much for joining me. Really love the insight. Appreciate it so much. Before I let you go, tell people where they can find you and find more of your work.
Listen, we just put out our 2024 draft guide, over 900 individual scouting reports. It's the largest draft guide in draft guide history. Last year, we did over 1,000. A lot of guys went back to school this year, so that's why we're not over 1,000. But listen, if you've purchased the draft guide since 2020, the digital guide, right now you'd be sitting on over 4,300 individual scouting reports. So everyone that's in the guide has a full page scouting report, and you could pick that up at footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. So not only will you be prepared for this upcoming draft, but for the preseason, for the transient rosters of the practice squad and guys that have bounced in and off the roster, we would have a report on people that you would be like, well, who's this guy we just signed? Who's this guy, Kyle Sheets out of Slippery Rock, the receiver that we just signed? Best believe we got a report on them. So again, footballgameplan.com/2024draft guide. Get your copy today.
Slippery Rock, only about an hour north of where I'm sitting right now in my my home office with my kids howling downstairs, getting ready for dinner, whatever they're doing. But all right. Well, hey, thanks so much, Emery Hunt from Football Game Plan. Appreciate everybody out there for joining us again on Chip Tam and Football from the Post Gazette, the PG Sports Now channel here on the podcast network. We'll be back with you later this week with more shows, the North Shore Drive and all that good stuff. And I'll be back again next Tuesday here on this show. We'll talk to you then. Thanks again to Emery, and we'll see you guys all on the flip side.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.